Welcome to the Laura Mayer Podcast, a podcast all about learning how to walk in the mental, emotional, and relational freedom that Jesus provided for you. I'm a little nervous about today's episode. This is the first for me, the first for us. I have a guest on here today, none other than my husband, Brian. Say hello.
Hello.
He's not too sure about this. I did not force him to do this. I did not drag him into this. This has been a conversation that's been coming for a few weeks, months, as God's been doing a lot of restoration in our marriage, restoration that quite frankly, I'm not sure either of us thought was possible. And one of the things that we've done over the last few months as we've been working through marriage recovery, really, is having date mornings on Saturday morning. There's a little country restaurant right down the road that if you blink, you miss it. It's not in a well-populated area, and it's very private and secluded. And we've spent a lot of Saturday mornings going to eat breakfast together and talking things through, what we've learned that week, what we've learned in therapy that week separately or maybe together, what we're learning on our own study time. And a few times we've said, gosh, I wish we could just capture these conversations as we're getting on the other side of things, realizing that other people desperately are looking for a way out the same way that we were. And it's not often that you get to hear stories of restoration. Often we just hear stories of divorce and trying to rebuild their lives after divorce. But one of the things that spurred this on as well, so we've talked about that yes, someday we'll share some things.
Someday.
Yeah. And then here we are. But I posted on my social media a couple of weeks ago, coming home from a mission trip in Chile where I was speaking at a conference, and I posted a photo of you and I embracing where you had come to the airport to pick me up. And it was just such a contrast coming home this last time from how other trips have been, where I wasn't dreading coming home. I wasn't dreading the anger, the chaos, the tension levels that would have been there before. And I posted that, and you saw the post. I mean, I talked to you about it and all this stuff, and we'd been pretty open amongst or between each other that it was okay to share because we really want to help other people. But I was amazed, Brian, at how many people DM'd me after that post. People saying, post more marriage content. How did God restore your marriage? What does this story look like? And I was honest with I was honest with all of them, but a couple of them, and said, well, we've not really shared our story. And that's not what we're going to do today either. What we all are going to do is talk about one of the principles that we've learned this year and just keep it focused on the principle. So I think we might periodically do this. Just y'all let me know what you think at the end of this. Let me know in comments and stuff if you enjoyed the content here. But today we're going to talk about the undercurrent of emotions during arguments and disagreements. I think I've heard the phrase before, you know, or heard people talk about how in their marriages they have the same argument over and over and over and over, and it's just like a broken record. And that was us, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's been so many times that you're like, why are we doing this again? Why do we keep having the same argument, same conversation, same hurt? Same emotions, just not really realizing what was going on.
And it would never really get resolved. And I'm kind of the nerd of the two of us when it comes to knowledge. I was reading every marriage book I could get my hands on, listening to podcasts, doing everything I knew how to do, and nothing was really working. And since then, you and I both have learned that you don't fix trauma problems with marriage principles. that there was a lot of underlying trauma in both of our lives.
So I've been listening to a lot of YouTube videos, and that's really helped me a whole lot. But there was something that I learned, and when I heard it, it just clicked, that the gentleman said that we don't have marriage people problems. We have single people problems that we brought into marriage. And that was a lot of what was going on with us, not really realizing that that was the case, that we both needed to heal.
And we got married so young. I was 19, almost 20. I turned 22 weeks later, and then you were already 21. And so I know in my mind, I felt like we were starting this marriage like with a blank slate, that any problems that occur in marriage occur after the wedding day, and you learn to work through those together. I didn't realize that we were both coming into this marriage with different conflict styles, conflict resolution styles, or the lack thereof, different fears, different survival skills that we had learned in our own childhoods because of different levels of dysfunction we both grew up in. And that's the tools we had. That's the toolboxes that we showed up with in our marriage. And it's been a painful one. It's not been the happy story that you know, sometimes we've heard other people share, and I think there's been a lot of shame in that. There's been a lot of shame in that for me. And I know you've talked about the shame.
Yeah, the shame for a man, at least how I felt, was not being confident in it, not really having knowledge of what a marriage was supposed to be. I mean, I knew what a bad marriage looked like. I'd seen that. But I just didn't really have what a good marriage was supposed to look like.
And we've learned too through therapy that men, you guys are very competency based. Men take a lot of healthy pride in feeling competent. And that's why there's, you know, the old joke that men don't stop and ask for directions or whatever. And it's, and whether that's true or not, although I feel like that's kind of true for us, it's because it kind of threatens your sense of competency. And so maybe there's this assumption that when you get married, you should just know what to do. You should just know how to be a good husband or know how to be a good father. And then for women, our greatest desire is to be loved. And so when there's not that emotional connection and there's a lot of anger within the house, I know for me, there was a lot of shame of no matter how hard I work, I'm not loved. So what is so flawed about me? And then I'm sure, you know, you've shared with me something similar.
Yeah, and the shame with me was I can't do it right. Everything that I do is wrong. I try hard to do the right thing and try to be at my best, but it just never seems to be good enough. So then that was a major poke at my ego, because no matter what I did, it was never enough. So that was very shameful.
And then just made you very angry.
Angry at myself, mostly.
But I didn't know that. Because I grew up in a very angry home. And so I'm highly sensitive to anger. Huge trigger. And so your anger at yourself, I interpreted, and we're going to get into that a little bit later, as being directed at me. And so then I kicked into high over-functioning gear, trying to be enough, trying to be perfect enough, trying to check all your boxes, trying to meet all your needs, memorizing your love languages, all the information that's out there for a healthy marriage. I was trying to apply it to a trauma based relationship, really. I don't know if that's even the correct way to say that, but so I want to get into talking about this undercurrent of emotions. So think of it this way, our listeners out there. when you're having a disagreement with somebody or even just an interaction, that all of a sudden what you thought was just a simple interaction, they way overreact. Maybe you think the issue is like a level 3 and they react at like a level 8 or a 9. You probably touched on trauma. You probably touched on a bruise there. And let me just define trauma, how we're going to talk about it today in this podcast. It seems to be, from what I understand, I am a board certified mental health coach, but I am not a licensed therapist. But this is something that I've studied for several years, and how we're going to talk about trauma today is the effects of things we grew up in, dysfunction that we grew up in, and how it marked us and how it changed our view of ourselves. It left a lasting negative imprint.
And what I have to say about that is we didn't realize some of the toxic traits and some of the trauma because it just felt normal.
Yeah. It was our normal. And we were still functioning, and it wasn't the horrific stories that you hear of other people go through, so we minimize that. But nonetheless, those events, living in such dysfunction, molded our brain at a molecular level and caused us to function from this survival place. And then that's what we brought into our marriage. But so whenever there's an argument or a disagreement or a conversation going on, I want you to think of it like a river. And that's how we've started thinking about our conversations. A river, when you look at it from the surface, there's a flow of water. The current is flowing. And whether it's slow or fast, doesn't really matter. But underneath the surface of the river is where the undercurrent is. Sometimes it's referred to as the undertow. And that can be so strong and powerful. That's stronger and more powerful. It's actually the energy that's running the river. And there can be swirls in the current underneath the surface. If there's a large rock under there, if a tree has fallen during a storm, it can create these underwater pathways that the water is running, and it creates suction. And that's when it's really dangerous. People can get pulled under and drown because those undercurrents are so, so strong. And you can't tell, can you?
It just looks peaceful on the top.
Yeah, you can't tell from the top the activity that's going on below. Or maybe you just know it looks fast on top, but it's being charged by that undercurrent. So one of the things that we've learned going through therapy this last year is how many couples spend all their time discussing the facts of the situation. The facts are what you see on the surface. And you're both taking turns. I'm saying my side of the facts.
And you're describing the other view from your side. There's a picture where it's a 6 and a 9 on the ground, and each person's looking at it from a different perspective. And you can argue all day long that, hey, from my side, it's a 6.
And then my side, it's a 9. Why are you such an idiot? Why can't you see that it's a 9?
But that's all the superficial, on the surface, facts-based arguments.
And we would pour so much energy. I know I would. I would pour so much energy in thinking that if I could just explain this enough, if I could just use enough words, if I could just, I don't know, if I could do enough, you would see what I'm saying. And it seemed like no matter how much I would explain that something was important to me or how much it hurt me when you went off in a rage or what it was doing, and it just never got across. And then for you, you had a little bit more nuance there because as a child, you were shamed for any type of emotion. And I think that's very common for men.
Yeah. That one, it goes down to the, if you've heard the phrase, big boys don't cry. That was pretty much where I lived at. If something happened, no matter what that something was,
even if you fell and actually were injured.
Yeah. So it was just suck it up, stuff your emotions, keep on going. And that was pretty destructive.
It was. And, you know, it's interesting. And I think, honestly, that could be a whole podcast episode in and of itself. Let's do that, where we're talking about learning to use your emotional skills. God has emotions. All throughout the Word of God, all throughout the Bible, it talks about different emotions that God has. And emotions are a gift from Him.
Well, in that, there's one where He talks about, you can be angry, but do not sin. Well, I was definitely angry, but I was sinning. And that's what I had to learn the difference in, on how I could actually have a righteous anger and be upset, but not take it out as vindictive or since you hurt me, well, I'm going to turn around and hurt you.
Yeah. Yeah. But because you were shamed for any emotion, if you were sad or if you were hurt or if you were embarrassed or if you were tired, any of those things, it was just shame. It was almost like anger was the only legal emotion. So that's the one you got good at. And you know, we tell our little boys, don't cry, which is so destructive because basically what you're doing, you know, emotions just give you information, very much like the instrument panel on the front of a car. It'll light up to let you know it's, you know, you've got a low tire or check engine. That's what emotions are. It's just giving you information. And with our young boys, it's like we put duct tape over that instrument panel where they can't see any of it. They're out of touch, don't even know what's going on under the hood, but we expect them to be able to go the distance.
Okay. And with that as well, yes, the shutting off of emotions. There's a Brené Brown. She talks about that, and she has a quote that she says that you cannot selectively numb an emotion. And that's what I had done for years, was try to numb down any pain or sorrow or hurt or guilt or anything like that. Is just try to just make that pain go away. And in that process, it cut off empathy. It cut off being able to be happy for other people, to be able to see their side of something, because, well, I just didn't have that. So that, over this last year, I've been growing that part of myself, and it's been very helpful for our marriage.
Oh, it's changed it. It's changed it because now you're participating on more than just the superficial go to work, be a body in the house, because relationships require a high emotional IQ.
And with my trauma in particular, it seemed like I was stuck. And I've heard this described a couple different ways, but if you want to think about it easily, your most basic, simple crayon box. I had 8 colors in my emotional wheel. You, on the other hand, Laura, had like 256 different colors.
Because I'm a girl, so I was allowed to use my emotions. I was allowed to express them. I was allowed to pay attention to the information they were giving me. And so I knew what was going on under the hood with me. You were never allowed. You were shamed for it. So you didn't understand yourself. If you couldn't even understand yourself, you weren't able to understand me. You weren't able to understand our children. You weren't able to understand even, it flowed over in friendships and your work even.
Yeah, and I had really no idea because I thought I only had like 6 or 8 colors, and most of those were angry, or at least what I thought were angry.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't ever able to develop that side of my EQ. And that was a concept that really kind of shocked me because I'd always heard of an IQ, and of course you want to be as smart as possible. But I didn't realize that you could be emotionally deficient and not be able to recognize your own emotions, which that was a large key in unlocking myself.
Yeah. It's like your hands were tied behind your back and you were expected to climb a tree. So back to the river analogy, what we learned is that when you're just repeating yourself over and over and over and you're getting nowhere, and also when there's an extreme reaction, to know that you hit a bruise in the other person, that may have been placed there by someone else.
And in my case, I didn't realize that it was an actual bruising that someone else had done. But still, nevertheless, when you touched that, or when you you triggered, that word trigger's been thrown out a whole lot. So, I mean, I really don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But it was something where you did something that was innocent in and of itself. But if it hit that wound in me, then it would trigger my trauma response that, ooh, now I'm on edge. And I always felt like I was walking around on a level 8.5, 9 on my trauma response. So I was always on edge, or always felt anxious.
You were always in survival mode, and you and then treated me like I was the enemy, even if it was something I didn't mean to do, or, you know, so it really got to a very, very toxic and abusive place. And that'll come later in our story. But one of the things we learned to do is go under the surface. We've learned to pause and say, oh, wait, we're just looking at the surface here. We're talking about facts. Most couples just swap facts back and forth. The details, this is how, you know, what you did. This is what I think you meant, all this stuff. And really what they need to do is let each person take a turn going under the surface and saying, this is how I felt. Because what you're doing is you're giving your spouse insight into your inner workings, how things affect you, how you're perceiving that interaction. And I guarantee you're perceiving that interaction with your spouse through the eyes of you as a child. I know that as a child growing up, there was this constant feeling of I wasn't enough. Because of the anger and the dysfunction in my home, I clicked into over-functioning gear and thought that if I could keep the house perfect enough, if I could help with my siblings enough, if I could help be mom's helper enough, all of these things, that it could make our lives peaceful. And of course, that's not how that works. But see, a child never looks at a parent and goes, what's wrong with you? A child always looks at a parent and goes, what's wrong with me? And so that I internalized all that dysfunction. And so then when you and I, now married, would have a negative interaction, or you seem to be upset about something, and you were walking around at an 8 or a 9 all the time, so you were always upset about something, I went with the same narrative. It was the same. The little girl on the inside of me was still saying, I'm not enough. I'm still not enough to earn love. I'm still not enough to earn peace. I'm still not enough for a happy marriage. And then in
on my side of it, like just walking around in that 8.5, 9 anxiety level, trauma response level, whatever you want to call it, most of the time I was trying to figure out what I was feeling. Why am I mad? What has upset me? And I really could never get to that answer, because I didn't have the ability at the time. And that's something that I'm going to encourage any guys out there, or females for that matter, to get more in touch with your emotional side and to learn. One of the things is printing off one of the emotional color wheels that describes all, not all of them, but a lot of the different emotions. And just being able to recognize how and what I was feeling at a particular time, and being aware in the moment of what was going on, and being able to pinpoint, okay, well, I'm feeling this way, helped me a lot.
And it took a while for you to even get to that point of asking yourself the question, what am I feeling right now? The early years, you've told me before, you really thought I was the enemy. And you thought I was the threat, because I was the thing that triggered.
Yeah.
And one of the things we learned, that even when I would lean in more to nurture and to show love, that even that was very threatening to you. Because you didn't trust. You grew up not being able to trust anyone around you. So that, and we think we leave those things, we think we leave them behind. But if you, you don't leave anything behind that you're not willing to process. Stuffing it down is not the same as leaving it behind, and it will resurface just like a beach ball that you're, that's fully inflated and you're trying to hold it underneath the water. It's gonna pop up, and it's gonna pop up hard and aggressively.
And the more you force it down, the more pressure it's gonna have to want to come to the surface.
So then when it comes to the surface, you have to be willing to look at yourself and look at these emotions and say, I'm gonna deal with these. I'm gonna process this. I'm gonna process the things that happened to me. I'm gonna process how it made me feel. And I would encourage you, anybody out there, to get professional help from a professional, either licensed counselor, licensed therapist, or sometimes even I know with my clients, some things can just be worked through with a mental health coach. But when you're getting into the areas of trauma, it's really more appropriate to seek professional licensed care.
And with the guys, I would want to encourage you in this particular area that going to a counselor or going to someone for help is actually a sign of strength. It's not a weakness. It's saying, hey, I don't understand something, or I can't comprehend this. So if you seek that knowledge out, it's actually growing you, which is a strength-based versus showing a weakness that I don't have it all together. Because if you already had it all together, you wouldn't have any issues. You wouldn't have any problems. So if you are going through something, especially marriage or that individual.
Work relationships. This will affect every single connection you have. If you find yourself, like in your case, always angry, quick to blame everybody else on the road is an idiot, my boss is an idiot, that person's an idiot, there's just so much anger. Actually, I did a couple of episodes previously on this podcast. One of them is called The Wounded Heart, and one of them is called The Offended Heart. And really, it's just two sides of the same coin. The wounded heart is someone who is like that porcupine that turns the quills inward and internalizes the pain and destroys themselves and is saying, you know, what's so wrong with me? And that was definitely me. And then that offended heart is more the image of a porcupine whose quills are outward, bumping into everybody else and wanting to know why they're all so pokey and what's their problem. And so both of them are damaging. Neither one is more noble than the other. Both of them, you have two people who are hurting and desperately need help. So we learned to pause the conversations when things were getting heated and when we could tell that we were just missing each other, that we were just arguing facts, 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 and we were saying the same thing over and over, to stop and go, let's look at the undercurrent. And so one of the things we did was we would take turns explaining I statements. This was not the time to accuse the other person of something, but explaining how I felt. So an example of that is I might say, instead of saying, you hurt my feelings and you always do this and you never do this and I just think you're a jerk and that you know, whatever it is, where these are all very accusatory statements. Instead, I would make I statements about my own emotions. And I would say, here's one. I'm feeling really unsafe right now. When your voice raises, I feel very unsafe. And I can feel those survival skills kicking in, that fight, the trauma responses of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. For me, I've always clicked into that fawn or the flight. And I think you're a little bit more of a freeze or a fighter.
Yeah, definitely probably a fighter. But I was going to mention something while ago about the accusatory attitude and tones and that type of stuff. When in the past you would come at me accusing me, that would trigger my trauma response. And then I would go into the fight mode, which would only make it worse.
Yeah.
It would never help the situation. But then you end up getting into just escalating your voice. And then that would cause more triggers on you.
So I'm feeling unsafe. You're feeling what?
In that particular instance, I'm feeling defenseless that you're attacking me and accusing me of not caring for you or not loving you, which is not the case.
But there was no emotional connection there, and there was no listening to any of my concerns. And then there was just constant anger. And so that was the only information I had to go off of. And then you're someone who was only working with a few crayons in your box as far as emotions you knew how to deal with. And so there was this undercurrent even inside of you all the time.
All the time.
All the time. And so anything we did just set that off. And for the longest time, you would blame us. And then it's taken just a lot of inner work to work through that. But then too, I've had to learn to change my approach on things too. Sometimes in my effort to try to help, I was controlling, I was smothering, and because I wanted it to be healthy so bad, it was kind of one of those, no matter what I have to do, we're going to talk this out. And I know one of the things you've shared with me and that you've learned from one of the ministers that you've listened to a lot that teaches on marriage, Jimmy Evans, he talks about the effects of divorce. And you were a child of divorce. And so one of the fears you've shared with me before, that you were always afraid you even said that on our wedding day that you believed I would leave someday.
Yeah, and it was like a deep down, I didn't want it to be true, but it was that almost like that self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, I just always had that thought in the back of my mind. And with our counseling, that was one of the very first things that the counselor asked was, you know, conflict resolution in your house when you were growing up. And I can honestly say I don't remember any of it. I don't think there was any conflict resolution whatsoever. They had arguments, they had disagreements, but they could never really settle what was going on. And that's what I grew up in. So it didn't help. So when he asked me the question, I was kind of dumbfounded, like, what do you mean conflict resolution? Which now I've actually learned more about it and tried to figure out what was going on.
That there's a conflict and both sides work together to compromise and come to a resolution. And neither of us saw that modeled in front of us.
Yeah, and there was never any of the, well, this is how I feel. And it always seemed to be the accusatory side of it, of you did this to me.
And full-blown fights, and things got very physical.
Yeah.
And there was danger involved. And so you've said before that every time that I was just the least bit disappointed, even if I said, oh, you're supposed to get milk on your way home and you didn't, and oh man, that you would think, oh, she's leaving.
Yeah, she's so leaving. Jimmy Evans talks about, there was a book written, and I can't remember the author's name at the moment, but we'll probably put it in the show notes, where it talks about the effects of divorce on children. And in that, anytime that there was a conflict, anytime there was an argument or a misunderstanding or whatever it was, always in the back of my mind, subconsciously, I was like, well, this could be that conversation. This could be that argument that she'll just want to leave. And so I never wanted to actually even argue. I didn't want to get into a conflict. And we're different people, so there's going to be disagreements. There's going to be...
just things that need to be discussed and figured out, and wouldn't even engage in just a conversation to figure something out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to like the undercurrent, just explaining in a calm way, not accusing you of making me feel that way, but explaining the emotions that were coming up. And then the next step of that is you would then validate that emotion instead of you listening to come up with a comeback. You were listening to understand where I was, not at any fault of you, but where I was. And so then you would
or even trying to think of a response so I could tell you how I was feeling.
Right. So that just got it kind of back on the facts thing. But then saying something like, okay, I hear you saying that you're feeling unsafe. I'm sorry you're feeling that way. That is not how I want you to feel. But I can see how this is making you feel unsafe, especially as we've talked more to each other about our own backgrounds. It's really given you a lot of insight on why I think the way I do. And it's given me a lot of insight on why you think the way you do. It's given us a lot more empathy and understanding for each other. And then it would be your turn after you validated and said that you heard me. It's amazing how that felt like it threw water on the fire inside of me instead of gasoline. Because I just wanted to be heard. I just wanted to know that you were hearing me and you were seeing me and you were pausing enough to say, just for the fact that you feel this way, it matters. Even if I don't understand why you feel that way or that's not how I would feel, for the fact that I love you, if this makes you feel this way, this now matters to me because you matter to me. Yeah. And then in one of those moments of argument, of taking turns to talk about the undercurrent that was going on inside of us, me giving you space to then explain it, and maybe what were some of the emotions that would come up in you?
Okay, some of the emotions that happened with me were feeling like, oh, this is it. You're going to leave now. Some of the other ones were the, I don't feel appreciated. Don't you see what I have been doing, how hard I've been working, what I've been going through? I just never felt like I could get you to see from my side. And it goes back to that whole story that we talked about earlier. But one of the main ones was feeling appreciated.
Yeah. So when we were taking turns talking about the undercurrent, and learning to not say those things in accusatory ways, you would now change it. Instead of accusing me with those statements, it would simply be, I'm feeling fear that you're going to leave now. I'm feeling unappreciated. Even if you're not trying to make me feel that way, that's the emotion that's there. And then it would give me an opportunity to say, I'm not leaving. And that I could also validate that and go, I understand that you're feeling unappreciated. That is not how I want you to feel, because in fact, I do appreciate you so much. So that would add water to the fire on the inside of you instead of pouring gasoline.
Correct.
So just being able to talk about the undercurrent has been a game changer. Because once you talk about what's going on under the surface in each of you, not accusing the other person of it, but just saying, you know, I know this may not be how you intend it, so I'm going to give you space to hear how I'm feeling and then respond to that. Well, then we could go back to talking about the facts. After all that undercurrent had been handled and acknowledged and fears calmed, well, then we can go back and talk about the facts, because marriages, there are a lot of facts you got to talk about. Who's going to pick up who from practice, and that bill is due on Friday. And I mean, there's facts to discuss, but both of our brains, we could discuss facts so much better when we weren't in survival mode, when we weren't in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And that fawn is not as familiar to people, but it's that kicking into overdrive of pleasing the other person and over-functioning and trying to kind of get on their good side, thinking if you can be sweet enough, good enough, it'll calm their
And that is down. That's a sense of control.
It is, yeah. Well, that's really what, you know, when you click into fight or flight or freeze or fawn, you're trying to survive. And I've heard it said before that we learn those skills as a child, and that it's really healthy to go back and appreciate the child that you were. You did the best you could. You know, children don't have their own power. They're at the mercy of their parents. And so you learned survival skills. Even, you know, Brian, with your survival skill of detaching from everyone around you, from not letting yourself get emotionally involved. I know one of the things you said when we got married is not only did you assume I would leave anyway, you just went ahead and decided you weren't going to be all in so that it wouldn't hurt as bad when I finally did leave. And so we did the first 19 years of our marriage with you not being all in. And then see how the devil played that between the two of us, because I showed up in marriage as the worker bee and someone who was very used to overfunctioning. That was what I had learned to survive. And so I'm overfunctioning at such a crazy level, and then you are on purpose underfunctioning because you're so afraid it's going to hurt when I leave. And then my mindset was I'm never leaving until it got to such an unhealthy place that I couldn't do it anymore. And I think a lot of people find themselves in that same place of desperation, of feeling like I can't keep doing this anymore. And I guarantee you, there's a high chance that you both are feeling that way in your own way. But this has been a game changer to learn how to talk about what's under the surface and to, with the help of a therapist, to be able to even understand ourselves. We've learned so much about ourselves this past year. And then we've learned how to bring those things to the Lord. And those behaviors, those survival skills that we learned as a child, good job. It kept us safe. It kept us going. But the thing that saves you as a child will destroy you as an adult. If you continue through your adult life, when now that you do have power, you do have choices, you continue to operate in that place of fighting everyone around you, eat or be eaten kind of mindset, or that flight where you just run away from everything when it feels hard because that's what you did as a child to survive and to cope, or you freeze and you shut down and you can't even function. It's hard for you to even hold a job. Or maybe you click over into fawn where you are just the biggest people pleaser because that's what kept you safe. Good job, child, for doing what you could to survive. There is no shame there. But now the adult has power and the adult doesn't have to function like that anymore, and you can choose to learn a new way. And there's some fear that tries to creep up. We had to face our fears. We had to lean toward each other and toward the fear when fear would tell me I needed to pull away from you because this was going to hurt again. Or fear would tell you, don't be all in, don't be invested because it's going to hurt again.
And our counselor told us that. He described it and said that when that fear creeps up, or when you're having that anxiety of pull away or put your guard back up, to on purpose go towards that and to be vulnerable with each other. And that was a game changer on me. And of course, I did it in small little baby steps.
Yeah.
To, okay, is it safe now? And when I didn't get emotionally hit, like getting in the boxing ring or something like that, when I didn't get emotionally hit for sharing a vulnerability, I was like, well, okay, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
So then the next time it was like, well, she didn't get mad last time. I didn't feel any repercussions from voicing my vulnerability of what's going on or how I'm feeling. So then it made it a little bit easier the second time. And then it's just continued to grow. And then just being able to push into that and be vulnerable with one another has helped.
Leaning into, I just want to clarify here, the fear that fears like the green light to move forward, as it applies to that emotional space and leaning into conversation, leaning into being open. But, that is not the same as leaning into physical danger. And so what we haven't shared on this podcast is what led up to your heart transformation. And I think, we might have to do a part two, very soon to this, but if you are in physical danger, you cannot reason. Both of you have to be on the same page before this can work. There's got to be clear boundaries. There's got to be clear rules of engagement. And you need to be physically, emotionally, mentally, sexually safe before this conversation can even start. And there was a season where that was not true for us. We were not safe. But moving into a safer space where we could then start working on the marriage. So we just want to encourage you today that there's hope, and that the problems in your marriage might not all be rooted and sourced in your spouse. That there's been other things that have laid groundwork and laid ways of thinking down in your mind and in your heart. And that's been important for you and I also to acknowledge and know, and me to realize that some of the hurt and pain on the inside of me, you pressed on, but you weren't the originator of it. You may have added more to it in that same category, but you weren't the originator of it. And then the same is true for me, that you realizing that I was not the enemy, that we were on the same team, and that just because something I said triggered you, there may not have actually been anything wrong with what I said. It may have been something from your upbringing that someone else did or said, and I unknowingly, I triggered that. And so not seeing each other as the enemy, but seeing each other as a partner in digging out. So if this episode has helped you, you think anything else you want to share? It's kind of a lot we've given them today. I hope it's been a blessing. Are you okay?
Yeah, I was nervous. Still am a little nervous. So hopefully it came across okay.
You did good. You did awesome. You shared your heart.
Yeah, that's hard still.
You got a lot of it. You just didn't know it. But if this has been a blessing to you, please share it with somebody. Just click the copy link, share, text to a friend, message it to somebody that this is going to bring some hope to. And also, if you would do me the huge favor of leaving a review on the podcast, that works wonders in all the algorithms to push this podcast to the top. Where other people can find it easier and where more people can get help. It's amazing, either just clicking on those stars or actually writing out a couple of sentences or review. The algorithms love that, and it really pushes it up where other people can have access to this help. So thank you for joining us here today on the Laura Mayer Podcast. Join us here again next time, where we will continue learning that being His means being free.